Hi, this is Ruth McCauley returning with the second half hour of news from the Decatur area for Thursday, January 28th. And we begin with some of the recent deaths that appear in the Decatur Herald and Review. Walter A. Densler, 75, of Decatur, passed away unexpectedly at home on Saturday, January 23rd. Visitation will be held from 4 to 6 p.m. Friday, that's tomorrow, January 29th, at Printlinger and Earl Funeral Home, followed by a memorial service. His body was donated for scientific study. In lieu of flowers, contributions may be made to the American Heart Association or the Ronald McDonald House Charities of Central Illinois. Virginia Passley, 96, of Oriana, passed away on Monday, January 25th, at McKinley Court in Decatur. Services to celebrate Virginia's life will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, again, that's tomorrow, January 29th, at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be for 1 hour prior to the services. Burial will be in Mount Zion Township Cemetery. Memorials in honor of Virginia may be made to the Forsyth United Methodist Church. Ralph C. Davis, 86, of Decatur, formerly of Shelbyville, died at 3:18 p.m. on Monday, January 25th, in Decatur Memorial Hospital. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, January 29th, in Howe and Yockey Funeral Home in Shelbyville, with Reverend Lynette Dattley officiating. Visitation will be held from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Friday in the funeral home. Casual attire is requested. Burial will be in Mount Carmel Cemetery near Shelbyville with military rites by the Shelby County Honor Guard. Stephen W. Pokey Copeland, 67, of Peoria, passed away on Monday, January 25th, at his residence. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, January 30th, at Printlinger and Earl Funeral Home in Decatur, with visitation 2 hours prior to service time at the funeral home. Helen L. Rutledge, 94, of Shenoa, passed away at 12:30 a.m. Tuesday, January 26th, in Meadows Retirement Community in Shenoa. Services will be held at 1 p.m. Friday in First Presbyterian Church, Normal, with Reverend Larry Gaylord officiating. Visitation will be 2 hours before services in the church. Burial will be in Cerro Gordo Cemetery. Calvert and Metzler Funeral Home in Bloomington is in charge of the arrangements. Memorial donations in Helen's name may be made to the American Diabetes Association, the Alzheimer's Association, or to an organization of the donor's choice. Nathan Randall Evans, 31, passed away at 3:47 a.m. on Monday, January 25th, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Champaign. Services to celebrate Nathan's life will begin with a time of visitation from 10 a.m. until noon, Saturday, January 30th, at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home in Mount Zion. A graveside service will be held at 12:30 p.m. Saturday, January 30th, at the Macon County Memorial Park Cemetery, Harristown, with Pastor Mel Workman officiating. Memorials are suggested to the family in care of Sheila Kalapis. I'm sorry, K-A-L-A-P-I-S. Roy L. Graves, 79, of Decatur, departed this life on Saturday, January 23rd, at St. Mary's Hospital. Services celebrating his life will be held first visitation tomorrow, Friday, January 29th, from 5 to 7 p.m. at Walker Funeral Service. The funeral service will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, January 30th, at the North Jasper Street Church of Christ, with visitation 1 hour before that service. Burial will take place at Greenwood Cemetery. Professional services have been entrusted to Walker Funeral Service. Beverly K. Feggett, F-E-G-E-T-T, Feggett, 65, of Decatur, passed away on Sunday, January 24th, in her home. Honoring Beverly's wishes, cremation services will be provided by Graceland Fairlawn Crematory. No services are planned at this time. Finally, we have a list of funerals that are pending. Jane Hicks, 76, of Decatur, who died on Tuesday, January 26th, at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home, will be in charge of arrangements. Maxine E. Mayhall, 95, of Mattoon, formerly of Neoga, who died on Wednesday, January 27th. Swingle O'Dell Funeral Home in Neoga is in charge of arrangements. Michelle Nelson of Bloomington, who died on Monday, January 25th. The Sutton Memorial Home in Taylorville is handling arrangements. And Mary Jane Smiley, 76, of Waynesville, who died on Wednesday, January 27th. The Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton will be handling those arrangements. We turn now to the opinion page of the Decatur Herald and Review and come up with the first, the editorial. Snow removal should extend to sidewalks. Hopefully this won't be an issue for the remainder of the winter, but chances are it will snow sometime and we'll see a repeat of something that has become too common in Decatur and other locales. We've seen too many people forced to walk in the street because property owners haven't taken the time or the trouble to clear off their sidewalks. That was in full evidence after last week's snowfall, and it's only because of recent warmer weather that some of the sidewalks have been cleared. It's understandable that some people are unable to shovel their walks and that not everyone can get to it immediately following a snowfall. But when the snow is still there 3 or 4 days later, the excuses start to run out. The issue that it's unsafe because pedestrians, some by choice, others by necessity, have to make a choice. They can risk wet shoes and a possible fall on a snow-covered sidewalk, or they can walk in the street and risk drivers not seeing them and other hazards. This occurs in residential areas and in other more traffic-congested areas. We've seen pedestrians forced into the street on Eldorado Street, Monroe Street, Oakland Avenue, and Pershing Road. It's surprising we haven't had reports of a pedestrian hit by a car. The city of Decatur has, in the past, been reluctant to pass an ordinance requiring sidewalk snow removal. The reason in the past has included that having no ordinance puts the city in a better legal position than if it had an ordinance. We also noticed that the snow removal around some government buildings, including those owned by the city, isn't stellar. We would readily admit that ideally an ordinance wouldn't be necessary. Property owners would clear off their sidewalks in a timely manner, and family or neighbors would take care of those unable to clear their own sidewalks. In the past, young people were quick to remove snow for a reasonable fee, but that practice isn't as prevalent any longer. Whatever the solution, something needs to be done. More and more people are using walking for exercise even during the winter months. As we stated, some residents have no choice but to walk for transportation. They shouldn't be forced to risk their lives by walking in the street. Winter isn't over, and it's likely there will be more snowfall. We would encourage property owners to make sure their sidewalks are cleared in a timely manner, and that those who are able to help those who struggle, and that those who are able help those who struggle. At the same time, the city should consider again if a snow removal ordinance is feasible. We turn also on the opinion page. This is a letter to the editor, and the opinion written in by Sherry Procarioni. I'm sure that's not right. From Decatur, Procarione. And her letter carries the headline, Ask Questions About Mental Health Defense. Facts no longer make the case in any courtroom where psychiatry is used, obviously. That includes many of the mental health courts. Psychiatry does not meet the definition of a true science. It is merely the opinions of men such as Sigmund Freud, Carl Jung, et al., whose opinions get recycled over and over by successive generations. Repeat a lie or opinion long enough. In a courtroom where liberties and lives hang in the balance, and it's entirely possible that any two psychiatrists' opinions could be 180 degrees in opposite directions, reason and science demand that testimony and or psychiatric tests submitted on individuals should never be admissible as testimony or evidence. Public trust in regard to the use of facts when seeking justice must be guarded jealously. Please call your elected officials the guardians of the rule of law. Ask questions and express your concerns regarding this matter. A few of mine would be, when did the facts of a case in a court of law no longer matter? Who defines what mental illness is? When does it precisely start, and when has it clearly ended? Caution, the industry gains and retains job security by having all the answers. Are there mandates requiring such nonsense? If so, what are they? How can they be removed? Why are the taxpayers paying for the psychiatric testing and re-education indoctrination classes? Who pays for the graduates' celebration pizzas? How many have not received justice where psychiatry was admitted as evidence or testimony? And finally, what is the cost of the loss of public trust when the public becomes educated and wakes up to the fact that psychiatry is a hoax? Oh, dear. My, okay, that's the opinion of Sherry Procarioni of Decatur. I turn now back to the Decatur Tribune and Paul Osborne's The Editor's City Beat column. It carries the headline, Churches Take Firm Stand Against Any City Council Move Towards Casino. The possibility that a casino will be coming to Decatur is attracting a lot of attention from many members of the religious community, and they have asked members of the City Council not to approve such an operation. In a letter to the editor this newspaper last week, several Methodist church pastors stated, quote, We asked the members of the City Council to vote no to any proposal that would indicate willingness on the part of the City of Decatur to receive such a casino, end quote. The pastors spelled out their reasons for the opposition and made some valid points. The strongest part of the letter stated, We have seen the destructive results of gambling in those whom we counsel, both in and outside of our churches. Those who stand to gain financially from this proposal have ignored the societal cost and harm. The gambling industry has tried to take the BL out of the word gambling, changing it to the word gaming. As though gambling is just an innocuous game to be played. But gambling is destructive to the quality of life in a community and negatively impacts individuals and families. Please have the courage to do what is right and defeat the mirage of a casino as part of the solution to the economic doldrums of our community. To say yes would be short-sighted, foolhardy, and harmful in the long run. That's pretty strong language, which indicates the pastors will fight this issue, for they believe gambling is not good for our community. Actually, it is kind of refreshing to see some pastors speak out publicly on what they believe would be bad for the community. Such voices have not been publicly heard much in recent years. I have been informed that more churches will be joining in to fight a casino coming to Decatur because they believe that it is morally wrong for the community because it creates some serious problems for families. The proposed casino as it stands now would be located at the Decatur Conference Center and Hotel. According to Illinois gaming sites, it is estimated that the city could earn $3 million in taxes and that 200 jobs could be created. If the proposed casino is approved, the next step would be to seek approval from state legislators to receive a gaming license. Presently, there are 10 casinos in Illinois. The ironic aspect of this battle is that some of those who will also come out against the proposed casino are those who already own gaming establishments in Decatur. The owners of those businesses are concerned about the loss of revenue for them if many of their customers head to a new casino. Mayor Julie Moore Wolf has been very firm in stating the City Council should not be anxious to propose that Decatur be chosen as a casino site until the issue is studied, so Council will know what the city is getting into with such an action. Of course, the city of Decatur is starving for more revenue to avoid more taxes on its citizens, but there are a lot of side issues that need to be discussed before Decatur asks to be chosen. I think those who were on city council when the gaming licenses were issued to local businesses never dreamed how quickly those locations would spread across the community. It now seems like gaming places are on every other corner. I mention this because that's what some of the council members told me who were there when the decision was made to allow gaming. I think for that reason they want to be extremely careful on how they proceed with the casino issue. The casino project is shaping up to be extremely controversial with a lot of passion flowing on both sides of the issue. If the public outcry against it is substantial, that certainly could influence the council in backing away from the idea. If the council moves ahead with the proposed casino project and votes to be a casino site, a high level of opposition could also spook the state and elected representatives into killing any chances of Decatur getting the casino. There will be strong arguments on both sides of this issue, and the City Council will have a tough vote. That's why it is important for the members to be very informed about everything revolving around the proposed casino project. When they have all the facts and input, the community has a right to expect them to make the decision that is best for Decatur. That's the critical part of their job. We're heading over to letters to the editor of the Decatur Tribune. Our first is signed by M.A. Spiesel, S-P-E-A-S-L, of Decatur. It carries the headline, Decatur should look into tobacco products tax. Dear Editor, Decatur, being a home rule city in the state of Illinois, should look into a tobacco products tax to increase badly needed city revenue. Example, in the city of Chicago, also a home rule city, a package of Marlboro cigarettes costs on average $13. Here in Decatur, the price is just a dollar or two over $5. Most smokers will smoke at least a pack a day, and that's 365 days a year. Now, let's say there are just 5,000 smokers here in our city of about 60,000. What if the city council adds a tobacco products tax of just $2 per pack? Now, do the math. A $2 tax times a conservative 5,000 smokers smoking times 365 days equal $3,650,000 in new revenue for the city treasury. And that does not include raw tobacco, cigarette paper, cigars, and other tobacco-associated products. Just food for thought. M.A. Spiesel of Decatur. Our next letter is written by Dan White, president of Golden K of Decatur, Kiwanis. Dear editor, I would like to thank the ladies of Golden K Kiwanis of Decatur for their sacrifice of time in creating and producing trauma dolls. These soft cloth dolls are about a foot tall and then are given to the hospitals, fire department, and emergency organizations in Decatur. They, in turn, give the doll to a child who is suffering from a traumatic situation. The look on the child's face when receiving the doll is precious, and the doll has a calming effect on the child. I would also like to thank the Corvett Club in Decatur for their generous donation so that cloth and stuffing can be purchased. Several hundred dolls have been produced and distributed to different emergency organizations. Again, thank you to all involved. A letter to the editor of the Tribune written by Dan White, president of Golden K of Decatur, Kiwanis. Our next article is from Robert Jenkins of Macon. It carries the headline, Is Hillary Clinton the Best the Democrats Can Come Up With for President? Dear editors, hey all you Obama and Hillary-loving lefties that spit on our fine military folks when they came back battered and scarred both mentally and physically from Vietnam. Are you all proud of yourselves now that our dictator-in-chief you voted for has sold us out to Iran? Is Hillary Clinton the best you people can come up with? She agrees with Obama's decision to turn over $150 million to Iran, who, like Obama and Hillary, seldom tell the truth about anything, nor can they be trusted any more than you can safely turn your back on a rattlesnake. It finally dawned on me recently what has happened to the Democrat Party and the 8 or 10 rhinos in the Republican Party, a rhino being a Republican in name only, R-I-N-O. Those same cowards that spit on our military folks, some of whom deserted to Canada, most now have kids and grandkids. I suspect most, if not all, these people join the Democrat Party. I suspect that the far left wing college professors and teachers in our larger public school systems that are poisoning the minds of our young people with their far left wing communist like US of A hating propaganda came from the same bunch of cowards. Obama still has almost another year to further damage this country and our military, which he has downsized to dangerous levels. I hope all you Obama and Hillary voters are real proud of yourselves. You should hang your heads in shame, or better yet, why don't you just all find another country to ruin? Whew. Boy, he didn't mince any words. That's a letter to the editor of the Tribune written by Robert Jenkins of Macon. Our next letter is from Rocky Daniels of Decatur. It carries the headline, City's Casino Opportunity Should Have Been Fast-Tracked. Dear editor, watch what you ask for. If all you ask for comes to pass, there will be a lot of Methodist preachers out of work. Nice article, but not realistic. I don't think the challenge of having a casino is of right or wrong, but what pays. The community is what provides jobs, not the church. The community provides for the church. One has to have the other. If a family does a relocation, what are their priorities? Jobs, schools, neighborhood. How far down the list is your church or religious belief? How far will you travel to work or school? And how far will you travel to go to church? This society is locked into all things good and evil, no doubt. These things are all a free choice. You gamble or you don't. You go to church or you don't. You drink or you don't. All things of choice. I can go to a bar and eat and be entertained without drinking alcohol. I can visit a casino without gambling for the same reasons, and I can go to church and not accept everything that comes from the pulpit. Anyone that puts all beliefs in one thing is a fool. I do believe in equal opportunity to succeed or fail. I disagree that very little casino money will not come from outside the community. I think that's where most of it will come from. I disagree with the mayor speaking for all the council before a vote. I thought the mayor only spoke for the whole council after a vote. I disagree with a casino near the lake. Look, there are people out there willing to invest their own money without asking the city for concessions or tax breaks. I think by announcing that the council will visit this vote in a couple of months is ludicrous. That gives 10 other cities a head start on lobbying for the capital for a permit. Lost revenue. This should have been fast-tracked already to a higher authority, the state. That way the council can say, look, we supported this... excuse me. They can say, look, we supported this thing from the start. When if it fails, the council looks, and then if it fails, the council looks great. If it passes, the council looks great. If it passes and the casino fails, we still have a conference center and a hotel, not an empty building in one of our parks. As far as all the gaming parlors in the city that depend on gambling money to stay in business, shame on you if gaming machines are the only thing keeping the doors open. For the record, I personally do not gamble. I have never played a gaming machine. I have never been in a casino. I do believe in jobs and education, and that's what we need more of in Decatur. Whew, another fellow who minces no words. A letter to the editor of the Tribune written by Rocky Daniels of Decatur. Well, we're just about out of time, just for a lark, I'm going to go over to a column that talks about historical events of the day. In 1547, England's King Henry VIII died. He was succeeded by his 9-year-old son, Edward VI. And in 1813, the novel Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen was first published anonymously in London. In 1909, the United States withdrew its forces from Cuba as José Miguel Gómez became president. In 1939, Irish poet, dramatist William Butler Yeats died in Menton, France. In 1945, during World War II, Allied supplies began reaching China over the newly reopened Burma Road. In 1956, Elvis Presley made his first national TV appearance on Stage Show, a CBS program hosted by Tommy and Jimmy Dorsey. In 1962, the last of Washington, D.C.'s original streetcars made its final run. In 1973, a ceasefire officially went into effect in the Vietnam War. And in 1977, actor-comedian Freddie Prinze, 22, co-star of the NBC TV show Chico and the Man, shot and mortally wounded himself at the Beverly Comstock Hotel. He died the following day. And on that unhappy remembrance, we've come to a close of news, our hour-long program of news from the Decatur area for Thursday, January 28th. As I said at the start of this program, I'm thrilled that we're back on air and back to provide you with this reading service. This has been Ruth McCauley today. It's a great pleasure to be back, and I'll be back with you next week. Until then, y'all take care.